Hi guys, welcome to the Amiga Armor podcast. As always, I'm your host Lefarius, and for this week's show, I thought we'd take a deep dive into Atari's vaults again and have a look at one of their ever famous arcade games, Zybots. Seeing as the two companies, Commodore and Atari, were always at each other's throats, it's always interesting to have a look at over what they brought out onto the Amiga, and hopefully this one is gonna turn out to be a good game. I thought we'd kick off the show with a bit of Amiga Armor site news now. As we get closer and closer to the big 100, I just wanted to mention that I've gone back through every episode on the website and made a full list of each and every show, broken them down into years. You know, we're building quite the catalogue of shows now, especially after all this time. So I'm thinking that a few of you might not be aware that I also stick MP3 download links with every post on the page, mainly because I thought it would be a neat way for anyone who, say, has an older retro bit of kit, so to be able to play the shows or even burn them onto a CD, as well as being able to play them through all your favourite podcast players without being online. I also do full gameplay footage every week to go alongside with the show, so if you've some time on your hands, just pop on over to AmigaArmor.com and have a look at what I've been up to. It's that time of year where we've just passed another E3. It's done and dusted at least for 2019, but one thing I did realise this year especially as I was watching the whole event, it's just how none of it like held any interest for me, especially like it has before. Usually I'll spend hours upon hours going through podcasts, YouTube footage and all sorts of different stuff online, but this time I found that the interest for me in general is just waning. I'm also moving away from playing more modern games. The PS4 I think I picked up at Christmas time, that's been sat there gathering dust for almost 6 months. I'm seeing very little use out of any of the modern stuff that I've still got knocking around. Yet, at the same time, I can sit with my Amiga or even some other retro gaming console, you know, and lose entire evenings with them. I can spend days, if not weeks, with some of the Amiga games and retro stuff that I've playing. I've probably gone a bit overboard on some of them. Yet, when it comes to modern games, they're just not keeping me interested anymore. It's such a weird thing to experience, especially after years and years of gaming, to just lose touch with it all, and it's something that I've always thought was so important in my life in general. Don't panic, I'm not about to give up on the Amiga or the show or anything. I'm not sure why it's happened, but for me, something's definitely changed when it comes to the modern gumph. I shouldn't be too down on it all though. I mean, there's enough in the whole Amiga library alone to keep me going for years and years to come, but it's a sad state of affairs where you look back on something you love so much and the more up-to-date modern thing just doesn't appeal anymore. I would really be interested to hear some of the listeners' responses to this. Are you going through similar things, especially as we're all getting older now, we're playing a lot more. This is stuff from 80s and 90s effectively, you know, we're getting closer and closer to 2020, we're a lot older than we were before, stuff is changing. Are you struggling or do you find yourself sticking to retro more and more? Honestly, let me know. I really am interested to see what your guys' take on all this is. One thing I really must mention this week before we move on with the rest of the show is a brand new vinyl record that popped up in my viewpoint. It's a couple of tracks by Pete Cannon called Call My Name and Crisp Biscuit. Both were made on a real Amiga, and from the quality of it that I heard, it sounded like something that had come from a proper professional studio. You can buy digital copies of the tracks, but at just 10 quid for an actual record, you really can't complain at that price. It's also on a see-through 12-inch vinyl. Really top-notch, and it impressed me no end. Link in the show notes, as always. Next up, I have to mention some iTunes reviews. Basically, Titan UK and Johnny Bongo, who seems to be working through a current setup or run Lemon Amiga. He mentions starting out on an ST, but we're not going to hold that against him. Both of them just saying how much they really like the show and how they're enjoying it, which is awesome stuff. It's always great to see that the iTunes reviews are growing. By all means, guys, if you've got any review or whatever app you're using, just drop us a line and a natter a recommendation, because it helps us get found. Now, that's enough of me nattering on, especially for this week. It's about time we got on with the show and moved over to this week's game. For covering Zybots this week is mainly because I've no experience with it whatsoever. When we covered Escape from the Planet of the Robot Monsters a few months ago now, it sort of sent me down a path of looking at other arcade classics by Atari for the Amiga. There's loads of Atari games to be seen and played, especially with things like fan conversions that I was able to see over on Hall of Light, but I'm sure we're going to get to them all eventually. For now, Zybots will have to do. I do love a good bit of arcade fun, and though we've hit a few snags across the show so far, it's always good to see there's a lot more to cover, though I'm always a bit wary of being stuck covering yet another Final Fight. I still don't think I've quite recovered from that episode. The publisher for this was Domark. They worked on other arcade games, things like APB, Castle Master, Dragon Spirit, Good Old Rampart, Prince of Persia, loads and loads of games like that. Developer-wise, it was Teak, who also worked on Blasteroids, Chase HQ, Flintstones, Man United, Pit Fighter, etc, etc. And we've just done Pit Fighter, so well worth having a listen to. It came out in 1989 on just one floppy disk. It was for two players and priced at £19.99. That's quite cheap compared to some of the other big releases. From what I could find out, there is zero information about who coded, designed, or even built Zybots on the Amiga. At best, we can only cover the arcade cabinet's history. For the most part, though, it seems to be a fairly straightforward Amiga port. Judging from comments I saw, the game's designer, Ed Logg, didn't like any of the ports he managed to play and thought they were all screwed up. That's not exactly the best way to start a show, but we have to live with what I could uncover. In case you aren't aware of who Ed is, he's made some of the biggest Atari games of all times, pretty much that ever saw the light of day. He had a hand in Asteroids, Centipede, Millipede, and the Gauntlet games, to name but a few. Now, it turns out he's still quite active in the industry today, and it's possible to go back through the gamography, if you like, thanks to a lot of different developer videos and interviews online. It's very handy for us, of course, because it gives us a lot to show off in the show. It was whilst working for Atari that Ed was talking to Doug Snyder about the possibility of creating a Doom-like maze game with the main characters from Gauntlet. This was way before Doom even existed, so it just shows he was already thinking way out of the box for this one. Atari's marketing department, though, told him that they didn't want another take on Gauntlet. I mean, it must have been time for something new. So he had to spin this off into a fresh title. He had already seen Owen Rubin's arcade game Major Havoc by this point and wanted to use it for the Zybot style. And looking at the two side by side, they do seem to have a fair bit in common, especially with the map function at the top of the screen. When it came to the control setup and the design of them, Zybots was actually quite unique for the time as it used a rotating joystick knob to be able to move the character around the screen. It turns out that even though it sounds very odd with the turning knob on top, it was actually the best way to control the main characters. At least that's what they could come up with the time they had available. It just that it wasn't very popular with the players. Now, Ed thinks this was probably because it just seemed too strange to use. No one had seen it before. And it does look like it would take some getting used to from what I had a go of on MAME. Zybots does use a split screen, which can make for more of a strategic experience. The players are given chance to plan out their moves ahead of time and where to go next, which in itself makes it completely different to what, I say, a 3D version of Gauntlet could have offered. Ed does admit that the wraparound mazes for the levels were taken from Gauntlet originally, and with him seeing a lot of level randomization in other titles, he was keen to include it in this one. If it works, it works, you've got to go through with it. One of the game's biggest features, that 3D map at the top of the screen, was just placed there mainly so the player would know where to go next and not get lost. The side effects being that a lot of gamers though would just use that instead of the 3D viewpoint and able to play the entire game all the way through. Without it though, you would just get lost too easily, so it's a bit of a double-edged sword. For his final thoughts on Zybots, Ed says that the main game was pretty much the best he could do with the hardware available, and he felt that it was 90% there. Being something well ahead of its time, he had wanted to try something new for the arcades, but looking back, really wished he'd fought more for the Gauntlet characters, as he's sure they would have worked a little better than what they managed to come up with. And I suspect with that lineage as well, it might be more fondly remembered today as part of a much bigger series, because I think there was around about 4 or 5 different Gauntlet games, and it's still going on today. It's absolutely massive. Ports-wise, this came out on the CPC 464, Atari's Lynx and the STE, Commodore 64, MSX 1 and 2, the good old NES, and finally the ZX Spectrum. That's quite a few releases. The Zybots have invaded this once peaceful planet. Their underground fortress is guarded by robots controlled by Master Zybots. Major Rock Hardy and Captain Ace Gun have been sent to destroy the Master Zybots, and that's your lot. The story is fast and straight to the point. There's no made-up sci-fi fantasy epic spanning page after page in the manual. Teak really hit the ground running with this one. The aim of the game is as simple as they come: collect as many coins as possible before finding the exit and travelling down into the depths of the planet to hunt down the Master Zybots. And yes, that is his name. The main game screen is divided into 3 sections. The top half displays a map of the current floor, number of credits, active player info. On the left is player 1, shown as Rock. To the right is Ace. Beneath their name are icons for number of shields, door keys, and any of the items you manage to pick up along the way. The bottom half of the screen is split into a quarter of the view where your player can run around this 3D maze. These are robotic in nature, with metal walls displaying different patterns that can change colours between the floors, but for most of it they do all look the same. Major Rock Hardy is a really well-defined character sprite that's very clear to see, and they've done some solid animations for the movement that you can see on screen. He's sporting a nifty 50s style spacesuit with a quick firing laser gun, and you can quite clearly see all the arcade detail that the game's trying to replicate, right down to the aiming crosshair on the gun. Now, it's not much use for gameplay, but it's a neat little carryover from the arcade game. I'm not even sure how many levels Zybots has, but I couldn't find it out, but I suspect with it taking after Gauntlet, there's probably close to 99 to see and explore. Energy goes down over time as you walk around, which means you can't hang around the same place for too long. There's an automatic refill at least when you get to the elevator at the end of the stage, and a range of enemies will constantly be roaming the map, and they're always moving in random directions. They tend not to stay in the same spot for too long. If you can find a secret warp exit, you can also jump several floors ahead. You're given 9 credits and just 1 life to survive the actual levels. Unless you know of any cheats for the game, there's no menu or even options to speak of, but at least if you collect points, you can earn more lives to use later in the game. Losing a life will have you turn into dust in this really quite graphic fashion, and there's this blood-curdling scream which fills your ears. To be honest, that is probably more disturbing than it has any right to be. The levels have lots of coins to collect, which can be spent in a store between floors, and that appears when you reach the elevator. These are often carried out by the enemies, so you need to be really quick on the draw to catch and kill them to collect them. The upgrades on offer include more laser power, faster shots, shield upgrade, speed in general, keys, that sort of thing, as well as a guard mapper to show off the locations of stuff. And you can even get something that will slow down the energy drain as you're exploring the levels. Now, most game controls tend to be pretty standard, even for arcade ports, but Zybots, it probably is the strangest I've ever seen in all the shows I've done. You can move back and forth on the stick with left or right to explore the 3D corridors, and it lets you hold fire and tap a direction to turn the entire screen 90 degrees. Thinking about it, I'm not even sure how that actually works. It felt really odd to be running around and licking the screen at the press of a button. Though, not to worry, it didn't take too long before it became second nature. After that initial oddness, it just sort of works and had me wishing that other 3D maze games could do something similar, so it definitely worked on me. Though, having a look at a few of the online reviews, it's clear that not everybody gets on with it as a control scheme. It might be one to try for yourself and see if it's playable for you. Each of the floors is filled with a wide variety of murder bots, some have shields of their own, lots of lasers to slow you down, and on occasion the ability to reflect the weapons fire. Thanks to the flat map at the top of the screen though, it's really easy to figure out what's going on with it displaying every location, when you get the right pickup of course, and of course all the enemy movements as well. In theory, you could use that to play the entire game without the sprites at the bottom, but it's a bit difficult to line up the shots that way, and I'm not sure the game is fast enough for that to actually work. You are shown a big blinking arrow on the map, which shows off the direction you're facing, but for the most part with the map, I found it much easier to ignore it. As I said before, in the arcade, people would use that map to be able to finish the levels quickly, a bit like those old ASCII games, but that's down to what you prefer. It's always good to have a choice though, and I like what they've done with it. You've effectively got 2 ways to play the main game. After completing several levels, you will get to face off against the evil Master Zybots, which is just another big robot to fight, I'm afraid. This isn't exactly Shadow of the Colossus though, so as long as you play it safe, take plenty of shots and keep some distance, you're gonna do fine. It's not that much of a problem. When it comes to visuals, there isn't much in it between the Amiga and the arcade version. This is quite a simple game to look at anyway. It gets the job done, but it won't be winning any awards. all the levels and stages in 3D are convincing enough, and even though it feels a bit like 90 degrees is the key to everything, the box-like art style makes it quite unique in nature, and I can't remember any other game on the Amiga that even looked close to this. The sound effects are as simple as they come. There's no music to speak of, and there's some really basic sound samples. Weapons fire is pretty standard, and the only real thing of note is when you die, as there's a sample death scream or the voice of a robot saying intruder destroyed. It does need more though, and it's a pretty poor showing considering what it's on. If you're wondering where today's music came from, I went and pinched it straight from the arcade game. It's not exactly some overcomplicated overture, and when I first heard it, I was even more confounded as to why they couldn't have at least attempted something like that for the Amiga. Instead, it's nothing. It's silence throughout. It's just the sound effects. It's very frustrating. Let's move over to looking at some of the game's problems. First up, with too many bots on screen, there can be some slowdown. Nothing game-breaking, but it did make me careful of going into packed areas, as at times there can be an awful lot of them. You don't want to be fighting the frame rate baddie. There were times when I'm convinced that it could affect the control screen flick, and I thought there were a few occasions where the stick just wasn't as responsive as it should be. Now, the lack of music really is frustrating. The arcade cab has a lot of special robotic tracks across the level, so it shouldn't have taken much to get a version done for the home port. I suspect it was down to a pestering publisher and that some last minute deadline they had, but when there's an arcade game with sampled speech, it's a bit silly that they couldn't just have done something similar for the theme. Even if that was just playing a random music sample on loop across the levels, that would have done, I wouldn't have been complaining. It's not the most difficult of games to play, and that's pretty amazing coming even from me. I managed to get quite far on my first playthrough. That was even with me trying to get used to the controls. It's just not very challenging. When I looked at the screen, I thought that the split three view modes might confuse some people trying to play it. I've never played the arcade, so it did take me some time to get used to them. Fiddling around with the mouse, it's an option. I accidentally started a two-player game and it seems I could use the mouse to move around the screen. I wouldn't recommend it though, as it's nigh on unplayable. And I'm not sure why they even included that, because it's a very odd option to have. Moving over to the magazine reviews, Games Machine gave it 88%, CU Amiga 84%, Amiga Computing 78%, and Amiga Format at the lowest with 77%. Some quite high scores from the mags there. None of them really had any major issues with the Zybox as a port. My first impression when I played it was with the enemy standing out, especially with that roaming around the floors. They made this feel a lot more alive than it should have any right to be. I'd have expected them to be stuck in set areas, but they do wander about and cause all sorts of trouble. There's always a lot to take on, so it's never boring at least. It's just a bit of a battle with that slowdown. The 3D mazes are a standard affair, but I can imagine how impressive they must have seemed in 1989. This was years before the likes of Doom, so it's not exactly common, and for the most part, Zybox shows off a 3D world you can really explore. It does feel like a reworking of Gauntlet for sure, especially on many of the levels, and I think that would have worked a lot better than the samey sci-fi front that they've used. Most fantasy is generic these days, but this was back when D&D was turning heads, and I think it could have done even better like that. We have what we have though, so I won't hold it against it. My biggest gripe has to be the lack of any music, and although the sound effects do a good enough job, I just wanted more. The annoying thing is I checked out the Atari ST game, and lo and behold, it has actual music at the start. Very lazy, someone needed a stern talking to there. I can't lay enough praise on the control scheme though. I'm well aware it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but after 10 minutes play, I was running around the floors, firing and flicking the screens like a madman. There's something really satisfying about the way you can move around, and it's a little sad that it's only ever going to appear here. Unless, of course, I've missed a game with a similar control style, let me know, guys, please get in touch. To summarise iBots, it's a competent arcade port with a few problems, but I can put them aside because it was just loads of fun. The unique map and multi-screen view is really strange to play with. You can ignore sections of that without issue, but when it all works together, it just pulls you right in. It could have been better, but it could have been so much worse. Let's hope the next arcade release we cover is at least as good as this, because I'm impressed enough. Or maybe I really need to do a show on Gauntlet just to see how this sort of game should be done. And sadly, that's all we've got time for this week. If you'd like to comment on anything you've heard today or even just drop me a line, you can do so on lefarious@amigarama.com. Pop along to the Facebook page on facebook.com/amigarama or even drop me a quick line on Twitter, which is @amigaramapod. Before we sign out though, as is custom, we need to thank all of the show's Patreon supporters. This week they are 10 Minute Amiga Retrocast, Adam Bradley, Darren Coles, Gary Heather, Graham Vebke, Glenn Milford from Casual Retro Gamer Weekly, Jason Warnes, Laurent Giraud, O'Brien's Retro and Vintage, Pistol, Premsky, Quentin Barnes, Retro Ravi, Richard Legg, Richard Pearson, Sneff, Steve Engeldo, and finally, Treble. Thanks for listening, and until next time, guys.